is 9:01, almost 9:02. We have President Senator Geisel, Senator Coghill, and myself, Chair Dyson. We have two pieces of legislation before us this morning. We are going to take up first Senate Bill 132 and pass it. My intention is to pass it. We're going to accept the sponsor substitute. And as I understand, this bill has little or known opposition. If it's the will of the committee, we'll pass it out. And then we'll take up Senate Bill 104. There will be sponsor substitute or committee substitute. I've forgotten which committee substitute. And we will have a discussion of the bill. We will not pass that out today. So for us, we have Senate Bill 132. Also, we've been joined by Senator Wilkowski. Senator Geisel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the committee substitute for Senate Bill 132, version 28-LS1218-N, to replace Senate Bill 132, version 28-LS1211-A.
The objection? Seeing none, that the committee sponsor substitute is our working document. Senator Geisel. Senator Fairclough.
Senator Dyson, members of the Senate State Affairs Committee, thank you for hearing Senate Bill 132. My name is Senator Anna Fairclough. I represent East Anchorage and Eagle River. Before you today, we consider this cleanup language. We have had some difficulty in those who are turning 65 receiving benefits that the statutes and previous legislative bodies have supported, and that is when they turn 65, they can register one motor vehicle without fee. And that if they don't turn 65 on January 1st, because we now issue the licensing for 2 years, someone might have to wait 2 years to actually receive that benefit. I don't think that was the intent of the legislature, and hopefully you'll agree with me, and we'll fix this wrong in our state statutes. With that, I would like my aide, Tally Teal, to explain the differences in the CS so that you have clarity for what's before you today.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Tally Teal. I'm staff to Senator Anna Fairclough. Just really quickly, you do have the CS in front of you, and there are three changes from the original bill to the CS. First, after discussion with Amy Erickson from the DMV, we made a quick language change that specifies a person must be 65 at the time of registration to be eligible for this exemption. They were concerned about any confusion about the possibility of having to refund fees for someone who had registered at age 64 earlier in the year and would turn 65 and expect that refund. So that should clarify that. Second, also at the request of the DMV, we added an effective date of January 1st, 2015. This should just keep records and accounting as clean as possible for them. Third, we added a little bit of language to the title to make it specific to vehicle registration fee exemptions for seniors. If you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to take those.
Yeah. So if a person turns 65 after they registered the vehicle, they've got to wait the 2 years. Yep. All right. Any questions in the committee? Senator Geisel.
It's a zero fiscal note, is that right?
It is, okay. Yes.
Thank you.
Any, Senator Fairclough?
Senator Dyson, I would point out that if you look at the notes on the backup, it's indeterminate, but the DMV thinks it will be very minimal. They just can't quantify what it is. There are people, I actually had one of those persons in my office this morning where I said I needed to go to come down to this committee, and they were when I explained what the bill was, they said, oh, that happened to me. So it is going to have some effect. It's just indeterminate and a very small amount.
Good idea. All right. Do we have anybody online that wants to testify? Anybody in the room that wants to testify? All right. Being obviously the oldest person around here, this does not affect me. I'm well past it. Lots of friends that probably do affect, but they're dying off quickly. So I don't think my interests or any of the committee are any different than the general population. No further questions, discussion? Chair will entertain a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 132, version 28LS1218/N from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Objection? Seeing none, the bill passes from committee. We'll take a brief recess while we sign the transmission. Before us is Senate Bill 104. It was introduced last week, and we had some discussion. Joshua Banks, who works in our office and has done the primary work on this, has been working with two or three different state executive branch folks, and we have gotten some excellent suggestions from them, and we intend to incorporate them into the bill. Our purpose today is to discuss those. I think they were distributed to you. Take some testimony, and indeed, if it's the will of the committee, act on this bill on Thursday, correct? All right, and I might note for the record, the staff here helping us this morning are as often Chris and Emily, and which we appreciate you all's help. All right, Mr. Banks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joshua Banks, staff to Senator Dyson. Today, I'll be presenting in more detail the sectional analysis of the CS for SB 104, as well as going over some of the changes that have come to our attention since last week for some minor changes to the bill. As I mentioned last week, Senate Bill 104 has four major goals. First, we seek to restore crime victims to a pre-offense condition. It establishes a reliable funding source for the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. It sets a priority for the use of the criminal fund and uses a vehicle for compensation that already exists in statute. The first section of Senate Bill 104 in the CS for 104, subsection A, makes the language for taking away the legislative intent for taking away a felon or certain misdemeanors, PFD, uniform with our priority order set in Senate Bill 104. Subsection B would ensure that money from ineligible individuals, PFDs, goes into the criminal fund before it is spent. The purpose of this language change was to make sure that there wasn't an end run around to avoid giving money to victims. In Section 2, Subsection A, this section in total gives direction on how to spend the criminal fund. It's a new section that we're creating in AS 4323. So subsection A creates a priority order for how the criminal fund should be appropriated.
And for the committee, please ask any questions or make any comments as we go through here. Continue, Mr. Banks.
The priority order that we're setting is, number one, the Violent Crimes Compensation Board to make payments for victims. Number two, the Child Support Services Division to pay child support arrearages owed by incarcerated individuals. Three, state-approved court-ordered drug or alcohol rehabilitation costs. And four, the Department of Corrections for other incarceration costs. Subsection B, the Violent Crime Compensation Board will give a report to the Department of Revenue showing the amount of compensable claims that could have been given to victims and the amount that would have been needed to pay the first amount. The reason why we have two amounts in this section is if they didn't have enough money in the previous year, they can request what is needed. Also, in the case in the future, if they end up not granting the money that was appropriated to them in the previous year, they won't need to ask for, they'll just need to ask for what they need. Subsection C, the Child Support Services Division will send the amounts of child support arrearages owed by incarcerated individuals to the Department of Revenue. Subsection D, we'll have the court system report on how much they need to operate drug and alcohol rehabilitation programs. And subsection E, we'll have the Department of Revenue look at the reports given in sections B, C, and D and determine how much each agency should receive from the criminal fund based on the priority set in section A.
Subsection Senator Coghill.
So, probably two questions. Number one, going all the way back up, is that except for putting the compensation services as number one under section two, it put that compensation fund at the top of the list. But did the rest of the list stay the same? I'm going back in my mind trying to remember. I know support services, but it seemed to me like corrections was ahead at one point.
Right now, in current statute, there is no priority order.
There is none?
It's based on the governor and the legislature as to who should receive.
It's just a list.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's one of the major things we wanted to do.
Gotcha.
It was certainly, I thought, clear when I did the first restorative justice stuff 10 years ago that the victim was first. And that's one of the things we discovered here. And good catch.
All right. Thank you. And then the next question is, the having the court report on the department that that is owed for court ordered drug and alcohol treatment. So that means what they're going to do is when they assess a penalty, they just tally those up. They're not going to actually go in and find out what the cost to the program was, just what is owed.
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, that's actually one of the changes we're looking at making, because the court system doesn't have records of how much it costs for drug or alcohol rehab programs. And what we're looking at doing is making that to be the Department of Corrections, and they're going to report how much it costs for their rehab programs.
All right, good. So we'll get to that shortly. All right.
Yes. And I might add, there's two groups who kind of get money for victims to propitiate them. Department of Law, they go after the stuff that's court ordered. And they cannot begin their work until that's finally adjudicated. So that's always months, often years after the offense. But they're only going after the court ordered stuff. The Victims Compensation Board, they can begin right away to recompense the victims and so on and so forth. So we've been careful here, and particularly in our revision, to not touch what the Department of Law does at the orders from the court system. And so on. I said that right, didn't I, Joshua?
Yes.
Okay.
So going back to Section F, you'll have the Department of Revenue submit a report listing the amounts that should go to each agency to the legislature. This is going to be done during when the operating budget is submitted to the legislature. Section 3 establishes the criminal fund in statute. Currently, there is no statutory reference to the PFD criminal fund. It is really only in existence for accounting purposes. And so we felt that it was needed so that all PFDs from ineligible individuals, we can track that in statute to say it's going into the criminal fund. The last sentence in Section 3, you'll see that nothing in this section creates a dedicated fund on line 28 of page 4. And the purpose of that is to avoid misconstruing that this fund is creating a dedicated fund. In Article 9, Section 7 of the Alaska Constitution, it prohibits the dedication of funds to a specific purpose. In the 1970s, the Alaska Supreme Court did a good precedent case on Soniman v. Hickel, which dealt with the Alaska Marine Highway System Fund. The court said that even though the money automatically goes into the Marine Highway Fund through revenue received from the Marine Highway, because the legislature is not forced by law to spend that money in the fund on the Marine Highway, it does not violate the dedicated funds clause. And so we worked with legislative legal to make the language in the criminal fund very similar to the Marine Highway Fund so that we can avoid the dedicated funds clause.
Senator Cargill.
So the easy way of saying it is anything in this fund can be appropriated by the legislature for any purpose?
Through the chair, Senator Cargill, yes.
If I ever get to finance, I'll remember that.
And Section 4 has two changes to it. In Subsection 6, we're giving the Department of Revenue additional regulatory authority to implement AS 4323031, which is Section 2 of our bill. And then on page 6 of the bill, Subsection 11, will allow the Department of Revenue to use a list of ineligible individuals provided by the Department of Corrections and Public Safety to determine how much child support arrearages are owed by these individuals.
And I might add, in the really excellent discussions we had, we had originally were going to have victims paid 50% from this fund and 50% from the victims. And one of the administration folks, who was it, Josh, brought up the question, is that what you really want to do? Do you want to let the perpetrator off the hook, you know, for 50%, which is, and it was our decision based on that to say no. So what will happen is the Victims Compensation Fund will do what is appropriate and for the victim, but the perpetrator will be on the hook to repay that as the perpetrator is able. And my own experience with criminal activity is a part of the criminal's rehabilitation and or restoration is indeed to do what they can for restoring the victim. I think practically speaking, in many of these cases, it won't happen. But anyways, that's one of the changes we have here.
And finally, Section 5, it'll set an effective date for July 1st of 2014.
Questions from the committee?
A couple of just basic questions. I probably should know the answer to these, so my apologies. And I could have asked them earlier. If a inmate the question probably better stated, does an inmate have to apply for the dividend, and can they be forced to apply for the dividend, I guess is the question.
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Senator Coghill, no. They are ineligible to receive PFD. If they applied for PFD, then they would just get scratched off the list. The state, it's almost like an automatic garnishment process that the state takes away the PFD that they would have gotten if they weren't, if they didn't commit a felony, and it goes into the criminal fund.
So the assumption is they're residents in Alaska, and the dividend then is just a transactional question. Whether they apply or not, the state will get that dividend for the correctional costs.
Or whatever the
priority.
Down to the priority. Yeah. Senator Wilkowski.
Do you know if those who inmates that were housed outside of Alaska in Colorado or elsewhere were still considered Alaska residents who were obtaining their permanent funds?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I'd have to get back with you on that. And I'm not sure if Department of Revenue is online or in the room to maybe that can answer that question.
Now, we've got three people online, John Maloney, Child Support Services, Stacy Steinberg, Attorney General Assistant on Collections, and Leslie Houston from the TARP Department of Corrections. Which of you has the answer to this question? Ah, Dan does. Dan, please come up and join us. Dan's from Permanent Fund Corporation. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Dan DiBartolo. I'm the director with the Permanent Fund Dividend Department of Revenue. Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, the answer is we receive information only about Department of Corrections and Department of Public Safety statistics, so that would be in-state individuals only. We are not making the assumption for individuals who are out of state. So they would not be counted if they were out of the state of Alaska.
Very good question, Senator.
Yeah, just curious. So if you're an inmate, you're housed outside in Colorado, from you don't meet any of the requirements or the exceptions, then you would not receive a permanent fund. Is that?
And through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I would like to clarify that we never put an application through on behalf of these individuals. We receive a list of individuals that meet the criteria. It's three criteria in the statute, whether or not they're a felon or a misdemeanor, whether they were sentenced or incarcerated in a qualifying year. But since we don't receive an actual application, the assumption is made that had they actually not been in one of those situations, they would have applied for a dividend. Now, if the Department of Corrections or Public Safety logs someone as being sentenced in the state of Alaska, and then they're sent out of state for incarceration, I wouldn't be able to make that determination in my division. That would be a reporting anomaly from those departments, so I can't speak to that. I do know, though, that by and large in our discussions, these were individuals sentenced or incarcerated in the state of Alaska.
Further questions? So bringing the prisoners home has a collateral benefit that I didn't realize. Interesting. Further questions? Of the three folks here that are online, all of you marked down that you're here to answer questions. Would any of you like to make a statement based on what the discussion here this morning? All right. Anyone else, anyone here in the room that wants to testify? All right. Now we're going to hold this bill. Mr. Banks, anything else that you would like to say?
Mr. Chair, if the committee would like me to go over some of the changes that we're looking at making to the current CS.
Sure, thank you.
I can go over those real quick.
Please. And I think you all received this. We try to get it distributed to you.
So the first change
Excuse me. Do we have any extra copies?
Mr. Chair, no, not right now.
Yeah, John, okay, we've got it.
Yeah,
all right, please continue.
The first change that we're looking at making is in section one on page 2, line 20. After victims, we'd like to add and operating costs of the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. The purpose of this is to allow the Violent Crimes Compensation Board to continue using the criminal funds to fund their operating costs. Currently, the money that they get from the criminal fund goes towards compensation of victims as well as the operating costs.
So this just puts in statute that which is already the practice?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I think that shows up here in three or four different places.
Yes. On page 3, line 14, we're doing the same thing, adding operating costs of the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. Then at the end of page 3 and the first line of page 4, we're deleting subsection 1 and adding and putting in the language to the Crime Victim Compensation Fund established under AS 1867-162 for payments to crime victims and operating costs of the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. This will just mirror the language that is currently used to allow the Violent Crimes Compensation Board to receive money from the criminal fund. On page 4, line 2, after arrearages, we would add the words owed by incarcerated individuals with minor children. The purpose of this is to put a time limit on how much money from the criminal fund will go to pay child support arrearages. You'll have offenders that have life sentences, and when they start, they have a 3-year-old child, but 15 years later, they're not a minor child anymore, and so not in need of child support at that point. So just put a time limit on how much comes from the criminal fund. Now, page 4, line 3, we'll be deleting to a state-approved rehabilitation program and substitute that for to the Department of Corrections.
Excuse me, Joshua, what does that accomplish, that change?
Mr. Chair, that under the current CS, we are having the court system report drug rehabilitation costs. And they don't track that. That's more of the Department of Corrections.
All right, got it.
Then on page 4, line 9, we'll be adding and operating costs of the Violent Crimes Compensation Board at the end of line 9. Page 4, line 12, after individuals, we're going to add with minor children, again, to put that time limit.
But this isn't a change in policy, is it?
Mr. Chair.
Putting with minor children there doesn't change what the policy is. It just puts it in statute?
Correct. Right now, because minor children receive child support, and once they're not a minor anymore, they...
Sure.
Page 4, line 13, we're deleting court system and replacing that with Department of Corrections.
All right.
And those are the changes that we're looking at making. Are there any questions?
And they will show up in a committee substitute on Thursday?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Yeah. Questions or comments from the committee? If I haven't before, I want it clearly on the record. It is my intention that the funds that will be available for crime victims will go back and catch up on arrearages and what's due to them. It's not just this year's victims and this year's court-ordered restitution. It is to go back and catch up on what they were ruled to get. So, and if I didn't say it before, the Department of Corrections, and we'll let them speak for themselves, but the Department of Corrections realizes they're going to take a decrement in their budget from these funds, but indeed with the permanent fund dividend going up, what's the other factor that's going up?
Mr. Chair, I believe the Department of Revenue is predicting that the permanent fund dividend is going to increase quite a bit this next year, and so the criminal fund is going to
and the prison population has been increasing significantly. So, indeed, there may not be a huge hit to the. The other thing is, under Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, the department can now get reimbursement from Medicaid. Yeah, so that will be additional funds that will backfill from these funds that won't be going to prisoner health care. So that was the other factor I needed to remember. Senator Coghill.
So this allows the flow of money into a fund that will go into programmatic approaches to help victims. The Department of Law is still proceeding with claims that are owed. So how does that court ordered? So how does that work with this particular fund? They're going to go after restitution, as the way I understand it, and so that money flows in a different way. Do I understand correctly?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, the Department of Law, we're not changing any of their statutes. They're going to continue to seek after restitution for the court-ordered. Restitution orders, and this bill will allow money to go to the Violent Crimes Compensation Board, which they give compensation. It's different than restitution. They can give like a grant to the victim before there's even a conviction.
Okay, right. And I just didn't want us to relax on the way to go for restitution, because it seems to me that the victims still need that avenue held firm. And and that's something that whoever has the Department of Law budget needs to look at, what their tools are.
I might add, the Department of Law's collections department has accelerated and intensified their efforts and are getting two or three times the amount of restitution funds that they were 2 years ago. And this governor and this administration have shown a significant amount of enthusiasm for getting after the restoration of victims, which I appreciate. I didn't say that the governor has thoroughly endorsed, and he's not on here as a co-sponsor, and we'll let him speak for himself, but we've had no pushback from any of the, I'm not sure that's right. I was going to say most of the involved state departments have been supportive. Anything else, Joshua?
No, Mr. Chair. That's
any of questions the committee would like to get answered before we hopefully move on this on Thursday? There are, let me know. Any of the people online want to testify? All right. And no one here, anyone in the room? Thank you for coming to help us, Dan. We're closed public testimony, and we're adjourned. Thank you. Thank you, committee members.
So that'll come.